Gary.com/free.
Hungry? Turn up Gary Byron and Joe the Producer, the talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 Hartford and AM 610 Litchfield.
Hey, did you hear that the young right now are the most unhappy people in the United States? This is true. The World Happiness Report. I didn't even know there was a World Happiness Group. They released on Wednesday. It was showing that it's basically self-reported data from those under 30 years old. It knocked the U.S. out of the top 20 happiest countries for the first time in 2012. But it's really these young Americans, to use a David Bowie
reference. Yes, sir.
Love it. Thank you very much. which is sad. Now, on a related story, will the young Republicans come out to vote this year? Now you ask me, why do I ask this? Because, I guess Republicans are kind of known for not coming out to vote, and young. I don't know. I mean, the young Democrats, they vote often. So they'll be out there.
In the same election, you mean?
I'm not. Maybe. Maybe. I tried to set it up so you can read between the lines there, my friends. Like, some people got it. Some people didn't. Anyhow, good morning. It's Gary Byron, 7-Eleven here on this Monday morning. Glad to have you on board the old morning train. I bring this up because our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is the president of the Connecticut Young Republicans. He joins us every month. Let's welcome back to the show Ken Langill. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Oh, I'm Ducky. How are you?
Doing well. Happy to be back on.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that you're back on. So listen, I don't know about you. I was watching Fox News, I don't know if it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I think maybe it was last week. And they did a segment down in spring break. And I think Jesse Waters sent some people down there, as he usually sends a man out into the street. And this time they went on location to Miami Beach, where the spring break was occurring. And they were asking people, Biden or Trump. He's just asking random people. And they all, I mean, look, you only have time for, it's only like maybe a minute and a half segment. And there were people that said Biden, although not many. And most of them, actually the overwhelming majority of them said Trump. Now, in years past, I would have gone, if they're interviewing college age kids, I would have said, well, whoever the Democrat candidate is, that's where the college kids are going to go with. But I was a little surprised that they are for the Republican this time around in Donald Trump. Is there a shift going on with college age students that, number one, they're going to vote? Number two, they're going to vote for the Republican candidate?
Well, Gary, it plays into the statistics you quoted in your opening, about how the level of happiness among young people has really dropped off. And young people, especially kids coming fresh out of college, they don't see the same opportunities that, their parents had. When their parents graduated college or, went into the trades, it used to be, you'd work a certain number of years, you'd be able to, save up and have a down payment, you'd be able to buy a house, you'd be able to start a family. And now, because inflation and the economy is just so out of control, young people don't see those goals within reach anymore. And that's what's causing this sort of upheaval. And you're absolutely seeing it on the Democrat side right now with, not just the economy, but what's going on, at our southern border and what's going on internationally in regards with the war in Israel.
All right. So in this poll, by the way, I think it was in conjunction with USA Today, these young voters, these young college student voters said that cost of housing, student loan debt, political polarization, social media, climate change, the war in Gaza as reasons for their unhappiness and disillusionment. But as far as The next question, which is what is causing their dissatisfaction? These young millennials and young Gen Zers are said that everything from crippling debt, that was what you just mentioned, and inflated rent prices to social media's comparison culture has left them exhausted and unsatisfied.
Well, certainly, you know, social media has played its part, and you're seeing it play its part in everyday life now, whether it be elections. You know, it's the old saying of keeping up with the Joneses. Everyone always kind of, you know, looks at what others have and says, oh, I want that too. And it's, you know, it really is a dangerous trap. But, you know, turning back towards it politically, you know, it's making young people sort of consider different options. And this is going towards, you know, really there's a group of voters that have kind of been coined the double haters. And these are people who aren't happy with President Biden and, you know, aren't terribly happy that President Trump's going to be the Republican nominee. And this makes up anywhere from 15 to 20% of our voting electorate, essentially one fifth. And you now have in that little one fifth segment, that little 15 to 20% segment, Robert F. Kennedy is polling at around 21%. Mm. Third party candidates in general are polling around 34-35%. And that's, you know, all together in the aggregate. But you're seeing clearly that people aren't happy with the status quo, and they're taking a look around to see, you know, what else is out there.
All right, let's look at some of the poll numbers. Last Tuesday, four states had their primaries, and, you know, obviously, I mean, Trump is running against nobody, Biden is running against nobody, but just listen to these numbers, and I want you to assess this. In Ohio, Trump received 79% of the vote against nobody. Trump, though, against nobody, received 87%. Kansas, Trump got 72%. Yikes. Now, that would be good if he was running against people, but running against nobody, only getting 72% of the vote, Biden got 86%. Florida, Trump got 81%. Illinois, Trump got 78%. Biden got 91%. So I'm just going to look at that for a moment. That tells me that that Trump is not receiving a lot of Haley's supporters, and that he really does need to maybe extend the olive branch a little bit to her. He needs to attract the moderate establishment Republicans, and he also needs to maybe even attract the independents and the unaffiliateds, because Biden, like Trump, was running against nobody, and his percentile was a lot higher. Would you tend to agree, or is there some strategy involved here that I'm not getting?
No, I would absolutely agree. I think it's very clear that, you know, President Trump does have issues with independents, and especially, you know, Haley's voters. We've seen, you know, essentially Haley's, you know, delegates and voters have really, you know, they have really strong feelings, and are essentially in the, you know, I don't want to make it sound like it was 4 years ago where they're anybody but Trump, because they're not going to turn around and vote for President Biden either. And that leaves the very scary possibility that you're going to have a chunk of the Republican electorate staying home ultimately on Election Day. Now, you know, you can say what you want about the Democrats, but they typically, you know, vote blue no matter who's the old saying.
Right, yeah.
And you're going to see them really come out, I think, even if they don't love Biden, they'll go out and vote for him. Now, the key thing on that side is, do the young people show up for Joe Biden? That's one of his toughest segments right now, because that is really a part of the party that is splintered right now with the economic issues, with the international issues. And can he do enough to bring them back to the table when right now you're looking at, you know, DTCs and state parties all over the country just splintering over a number of issues on the Democrat side?
I talk to Republicans and Democrats and independents. I talk to the electorate every day. And the Trump, listen, I voted for Trump in the past. I'll vote for him again, you know, with pride, actually. I don't deny that. I'm proud of my vote because I was certainly a lot happier under the 4 years of I think we all were, certainly a lot more prosperous under the 4 years of Donald Trump than we have been thus far under the Biden administration. And I don't even think that's opinion based. I think that's fact based. But I digress. You know, the Trumpers are loud. They're loud. They rally. They wear their decals on their sleeves, so to speak. Where I think Biden, nobody wants to admit that they would vote for Biden. But the truth be told, I think if Election Day were today, Biden would actually beat Trump. I don't ever get confused about how loud a group of people are. There's a silent majority in most circumstances. And I say this because I get concerned, Ken. I get concerned because when I hear, oh, my goodness, this is going to be one of the most Trump is going to trounce Biden. This is going to be one of those sweeps like we haven't seen since the days of Ronald Reagan. And I always say, not so fast here, guys. I don't want to even talk about a red wave. Every time they talk, the media talks about it. Anything occurs but a red wave. So I won't even go down there. I don't subscribe to that way of thinking. Republicans are notorious for not coming out and voting. Yeah, I know it's a presidential year and more Republicans will, but there's just there doesn't seem to be enough of them right now. And if Trump can't rally his own party, and to your point where the Democrats, they don't care who the candidate is, they just vote blue, regardless of what their name is. I'm nervous. Should I be?
Yes. Yes. We absolutely should be as a party going forward. You know, yes, President Trump's numbers are better with independents right now, but it's close. Just to show you, you know, what we're looking at right now. President Biden has a 55% disapproval rate. Now, in most election years, you know, if you're the Republican side, you're thinking, oh, we're money, we're good, we're taking this thing home. President Trump's disapproval ratings at 52%. While I think there's certainly, and Biden's, you know, support team has pointed out this sort of amnesia of the electorate where, you know, they're sitting there thinking, you know, oh, everybody forgot what happened. Well, we're going to spend all this money to remind them what happened. They're missing the point of, yes, they can run around and say, oh, the economy is great and employment's, you know, never, unemployment's never been lower, but, you know, I just make the joke back, you know, hey, yeah, some people got three jobs and they still can't afford to pay their rent.
That's a good point.
It just goes to show you the state of the economy right now. And that is the issue that Trump really needs to focus on, especially in the suburbs. Illegal immigration is certainly going to play a factor in this race. We're seeing it, you know, on the news every day. It's not like it was at certain points where it was kind of, you know, hidden under a blanket, and, you know, people knew it was going on, but it wasn't so much in your face. We're now, because we have, you know, these red states sending National Guardsmen to the border, it's really, you know, come into the center of focus for the American people. And now we're seeing clips, you know, almost every day of you know, some sort of nonsense going on.
All right,
down there.
Ken, I got to take a break right here. Give us 60 seconds, and then I've got a big question to ask you.
Right. Elevate your legacy with Daley Connerton Memorial Company. Introducing Daley Connerton Monuments, where dreams take shape in stone. Immerse in custom craftsmanship, where every chisel stroke narrates a tale. Transform memories into magnificent monuments while you cherish the past, celebrate the present, and immortalize your story in granite and marble. Let Daley Connerton carve your vision into reality, creating iconic monuments that stand as a testament to your legacy. Call Daley Connerton, 860-242-4133. Daley Connerton, where memories live forever.
When shopping for appliances, where do you stop first? A big box store? They might be your first stop, but Ferrari's Appliance will be your last. From laundry to dishwashers, stoves to refrigerators, Ferrari's Appliance has all the name brands at the price you can afford. And they install and service everything they sell. Enough with the pushy salespeople and impersonal customer service. Head to Ferrari's Appliance in Newington or Naugatuck and discover why people from all over choose them over everyone else. Online at Ferrari'sAppliance.com.
Never a dull moment. The Talk in Connecticut, 103.3 and 104.5, wants your opinion. Call 860-243-1360.
25 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, our guest this hour is the chairman of the Connecticut Young Republicans, Ken Langill. Ken, on Friday evening, I was meeting a couple of buddies of mine for a coffee, and we're going to go out for dinner, and we were talking politics, and a couple of people that were in line at the coffee shop was overhearing our conversation, and they chimed in. Now, one was a Republican who is not crazy about Trump. The other, a Democrat who was not crazy about Biden. Now, to this point, the Democrat said, oh, my goodness, oh, I'm so disappointed in Biden. He shouldn't be president. He doesn't have his... he doesn't have his mind. I mean, the guy was a pretty rational guy, but then he says, I asked him, who are you going to vote for? And he says, well, I'm a Democrat. I'm going to vote for Biden. I said, even though you just said everything you just said about him, like, yeah, I was hoping he wouldn't get the nomination. I hoped it was going to be somebody else, but I'm going to vote for him. Same question to the Republican who wasn't a big fan of Trump and said, I'm going to vote, but I'm not going to vote in the presidential race. I'm going to vote for the state senators and the congressmen and the U.S. Senate and the state Senate. I'll vote for that, but I just won't vote for the top of the ticket. And I said, really? But you're a Republican. So that just proves what I say nearly every day. The Democrats unite, even if their candidate doesn't get the nomination. They just vote blue regardless. You're really voting for policy more than you're voting for the person. Republicans, if their candidate doesn't make it through, they take their bat and the ball and they go home and they won't come out and play, so to speak. And we need to break that. There's new leadership at the RNC. There's a new Speaker of the House. There's going to be a new Senate Republican leader after McConnell is out this fall. What needs to happen to unite the Republicans?
Well, obviously, we need a unifier. We need somebody who can unify the party nationally. And unfortunately, what you've seen, it really started in 2016, and it wasn't as bad in 2016. And even in 20, it started to come up a little bit. And you're seeing the splintering among the Republican Party.
Oh, we have been. Now, that's not new.
It isn't, but it's much more... what's the word? It's
pronounced.
Much more aggressive now. It's much more sort of deep-seated now because you're having certain segments of the party saying, hey, you either get with us or you get out. And that's not what the Democrats do. Now, the Democrats, they have their disagreements behind closed doors.
They do.
And even every once in a while, they leak out into the public. But what they do a good job of at the end of the day is saying, okay, at the end of the day, the five fingers make the fist. Unfortunately, on our Republican side, it's gotten so polarized that, essentially there's one part of the party telling the other part of the party, hey, either get on board or get out. And that other part of the party now is saying, okay, fine, you want us to get out? We'll go over to RFP.
Well, we air our grievances in public. And by the way, we're not in a position to say get out. We need every Republican vote that we can get. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there are, you said it early in your segment, Gary, is that, there's very loud parts of the party, and they have convinced themselves mentally that they don't need the other part of the party to win, that they're right, America's going to see they're right, and that everyone's going to jump behind them. And it's just not going to be that easy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm able to discern, I'm able to differentiate the loudness from the reality. Well, one group is certainly louder. I got to give them that. But it doesn't mean that they're in the majority. And I just think that, listen, I want Trump to win. But he's got to go after the independents, the unaffiliateds, and he's got to at least attract part of Haley's base, and that might begin with contacting her. Last 15 seconds, all yours.
Really have to unite the party, and, you know, the five fingers make the fist. Everyone's got to work together and take it to the finish line on Election Day.
Yeah, well stated. And hopefully with this new RNC leadership, we'll have that. All right, Ken, great job as always, my friend. We'll talk to you next month.
Thanks for having me on, Gary.
You got it, brother. You want to weigh in on this? All of our lines are open.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Former President Trump's expected in New York.
Zero pain. The voice of reason, Gary Byron and Joe the producer on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360 and 103.3 FM.
Dumpster fire. Ah, that get your attention?
It sure did.
Well, that's how the Connecticut media described the committee where our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair fortunately serves as ranking senator on. I just hope he knows how to stop, drop, and roll. Got a fire extinguisher? Actually, there's one. Isn't there one over there? There's one outside the window here. Well, down the hall a little bit on the other side. It's not a pretty sight, by the way. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 8:11 here on this Monday morning. Glad to have you on board the old morning train. Let's see. What does he represent in the Senate? Newtown, Sandy Hook, Bethel, Easton, Fairfield. I like when this guy. He's a listener favorite as well. Let's welcome back to the show State Senator Tony Wong. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. And stop, drop, and roll. Sounds like a rock and roll song.
That's shake, rattle, and roll. Something like that. Yes. I got to stop, drop, and roll. All right. Before we get into dumpster fires, I heard that you once again, I think we talked about this, was it a year ago or 2 years ago? You again shaved your head for a good cause.
I did. Yes. I did. It's an annual St. Baldrick's head shaving. And the goal is to raise money to fight against pediatric cancer. And I got to tell you, it's a special moment when we can make a difference to help those family members and their children as they fight cancer. It's one of the worst things in the world, and we need to beat it. And if I'm losing my head over it, no worries. It'll grow back, I hope. Knock on wood.
It has in the past.
Yes, yes. It'll be my eighth year cutting my hair, and couldn't have thought of a better way to show my support and thoughts and affinity for those families and children fighting cancer.
Yeah, no, actually, I can relate to that. I had a brother, and we lost him at the age of, I think it was a month before his 14th birthday. He had a rare form of cancer. As a matter of fact, it reminds me, is this the time of year when Rare Disease Day at the Capitol is? I remember being one of the speakers.
Are in tune.
Yes.
Absolutely. Just last week, we had Rare Disease Day, and one of the bills that we're considering that I'm supporting is to have rare disease biomarkers be able to be covered so that we can identify earlier and to provide care and hopefully, a cure for those impacted by the rare diseases. So you're absolutely right on. Rare disease was just last week, but now with technology and innovation, there are biomarkers that can track these rare disease, and I'm really encouraged about it that we're moving forward. You know, technology can be beneficial sometimes.
Yeah, no, I was it Dominic Cotton? Was that the gentleman's name?
You know, Dominic Cotton, among with so many others that are fighting for their loved ones that are impacted by rare disease. You know, just as so many advocates that we see up in Hartford, Gary, you know, their heart-wrenching stories really do resonate and make a difference for us to create a better state But it comes at a cost, right? You got to balance it with cost with some of the solutions that we need to undertake. One of the challenges we have is government can't be the solution to everything. And that's why, for me, being able to support an organization like St. Baldrick's and private institutions that fund research, it's kind of a collaborative effort. Government can help, private enterprise can help, and individuals and philanthropy can help. It all takes a village to make a difference. No. Government can't be the only solution.
No, you're absolutely right. So St. Baldrick's, you shave your head for charity, and you're also navigating a dumpster fire of personalities in an otherwise boring insurance committee. So I'm going to set the scene here. Set the scene for us. I know that you and Kara Pavlock, the leading and some leading Democrats, you want to pass a bill to lower health insurance costs, but Senator Matt Lesser said no, right?
The area of cognizance for the Insurance and Real Estate Committee looks at all areas in regards to health care insurance, property casualty insurance, long-term care insurance, and also real estate happenings in regards to a lot of the issues affecting real estate market and the fast dynamic changes in it, particularly after the recent Supreme Court decision on commissions. But what was remarkable is that there were no bills passed out this short session. It is unprecedented, and it really is a blow to the institution of how we govern and how we legislate. In the sense that this is a result of a majority, one-party Democratic rule and their inability to kind of find solutions. And the only loser in this, are the people who we had bills proposed and evaluated to have it move forward under discussion. And not only were they losers, the losers were people who gave up their time to testify because the issue near and dear to them, like the rare disease. Another is the experts that gave up their time and professional results to be able to give us the best information, and the advocates and the people that depended on these bills. One such case was that, you know, the Association Health Plan. It was a cost-saving alternative to unaffordable health care insurance for individuals and small businesses. And it was a plan to kind of utilize affinity groups like chambers of commerce, credit unions, Rotaries and Kiwanis's, individuals and small businesses that cannot afford the plans that are right now with double-digit increases every year, to be able to give them kind of a economy and scale and affinity. It makes all the sense in the world. We had a press conference just about a week and a half ago in which entities from, you know, the microbrewers to banks to chambers of commerce, CBIA, the Women's Business Development Council, a whole plethora of organizations saying this is what we need to ease healthcare costs. That went up in flames. Another would be how the governor's bill. The governor's bill, as it relates to addressing prescription drug costs, how we can manage benchmarking of healthcare costs, all of that went up in smoke as well. Another issue that was near and dear to me was how we can explore health insurance for our retired police officers after they retire and the gap that comes up to that. So there are many other things. Another aspect of real estate was, you know, we see a lot of fraudulent, you know, the case in Fairfield where somebody from South Africa took somebody's name and built a house on their land without them knowing. Those were considerations we wanted to look at in the Insurance and Real Estate Committee, but unfortunately, none of that got done.
Why did Senator Matt Lesser say no to this?
Well, I can't assign whoever the senator or the representative that said no to this. All I know ultimately is the result of it, that there were no insurance committee bills passed out. The problem is it was a Democratic majority rule. You know how chairs work. Mm-hmm. As the ranking, we are in the meeting, but when it comes to the decision making, it is the majority Democrat chairs that make the decision. So I was not privy to that. But I only know the sad result that we not have a meeting. But I want to say this, though. Those issues that I raised, there are so many important ones. As you know, in the Connecticut General Assembly, no bill, no issue, particularly ones that had a public hearing and a vetting and a real analysis of it, so there's transparency, are never dead. So that's the encouraging part, that there may be other vehicles for us to be able to put that in, because we've had the public hearing, we had the public input. Unfortunately, the committee process didn't work, and my hope is that some of the really important and positive issues like association health plan will find a home somewhere else and we get passage.
Who's the chairman of the party? Is it Matt Lesser?
The chairman of the
committee, I'm sorry,
the Senate is Senator George Cabrera.
Okay.
And the House chair is Representative Kerry Wood. I have good relationships. We all do, as you know, how I work up at the Capitol. But ultimately, the decision-making was up to the majority chairs. And unfortunately, they couldn't come to an agreement. I'm deeply disappointed. And I'm deeply disappointed for all the people that gave up their efforts and time and passion to focus on issues that they thought had legitimacy.
Yeah, but you know what, Tony? You know what's even more surprising? Yeah, I mean, I know you're talking about this bill to lower the health insurance costs, but that nothing got voted out of that committee. I mean, look, I was only up there for 4 years, just two terms.
Unprecedented, Gary. Unprecedented.
That is so bizarre. What did they say? How do you account for that? I know you're not the spokesperson for the committee, but as a ranking senator on that committee, what was the reasoning behind that they provided for zero? It sounds like somebody got upset and said, "That's it. I'm closing it. I'm closing shop." You know.
Well, both chairs need to agree to set an agenda. An agenda was not able to be reached. So as a result, you can't hold a meeting with one chair and not the other. So there was a disagreement to that, and there were a lot of important bills, and there were a lot of contrasting viewpoints on different bills. I'm just disappointed. I mean, I'll say it again. It was unprecedented. It's a blow to the institution and the importance of what we have to do to represent the people. But ultimately, it's a disappointment that process was not respected and people whose input was not validated one way or the other.
Okay. Stay right there, Senator. We got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to change gears and talk transportation. Coming right back right after this.
Time is precious. Between work, the kids, and caring for an ailing mom, I have less and less free time. So the time I spend with mom, I want to be meaningful. That's why I leave the cooking, cleaning, and laundry to Euro American Home Care for You. They do it all so that my time with mom is about us, not chores.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cleaning, cooking, laundry, bathing, and errands to Euro American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. Online at homecare4u.com.
Is switching your wireless service to Total by Verizon easy?
Totalmente.
And you get unlimited 5G data? $25 a line for 4 lines on the unlimited plan?
Total.
At an amazing price?
Total.
With no contracts?
Total.
Should you switch to Total by Verizon? Definitely.
Totalmente.
Find a store or switch suavemente at totalbyverizon.com. Monthly rate when you activate without a pay, plus taxes and fees. Discount begins the month after you enroll. Additional terms apply. See website for data management practices.
Stay connected through the day. The Talk of Connecticut. Coming up, Mike Gallagher, 10 to noon. Dan Bongino from noon to 3. And Sebastian Borka on the drive home. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3, Hartford.
All right, 23 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, our guest, State Senator Tony Wong. Changing gears. All right, you're also the ranking member of the Transportation Committee, and I got to tell you, man, 7 days a week, 365, or this year, 366 days a year. And I don't care if it's I'm driving to work at 5 o'clock in the morning or I'm driving around our highways at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The smell of weed is everywhere on our highways and byways. And you know what? No one cares. Here's the thing. I couldn't care less if somebody wants to smoke a joint at a party or in their home. I don't. I really doesn't bother me. But I always thought that in the early stages of legalizing recreational marijuana, that they were going to treat it like alcohol, where just like you can't go to work, you know, and slosh or start drinking at your desk, or at least unless you're a wine taster, then I guess maybe that's your job. I guess you have to drink it. But they're going to treat weed the same way. You can't be driving down the road, you know, smoking a doobie, and you can't go to work smoking a doobie like you would a cigarette. But yet, again, we were talking earlier this morning about just laws that you can break right in front of the police and they don't care. There's no mechanism in place to give somebody a sobriety test for weed like they do for alcohol. So what can we do? I always thought we put the carriage before the horse on this anyways, that we should have held off on legalizing it recreationally until there was a test put in place for drivers. But what do I know? You know, I always think, Gary, of common sense.
You are such a cool cat. I haven't heard the term doobie in such a long time. that being said, I completely agree with you.
I was listening to China Grove, that's why.
What people want to do for recreation, but the process was deeply flawed. You know, and I want to share with your listeners, when we evaluated in the legislature whether to legalize marijuana or not, that legislation and that transparency process never went through the public health committee, never went through the public safety committee, never went through the education committee in understanding the impact of legalization would have on public safety in the roads, our public health in regards to cognitive development, and education and how we can impact the educational access and success of our children under the influence. It only went to finance, Gary. That is the sadness of the people who supported the bill. And the problem is the very same people that supported it for all the reasons of finance and social equity. I know it's important, but when you don't understand the consequences of the Pandora box that you opened up, we're dealing with it right now. Now, in transportation, and one aspect of public safety is the fact that impaired driving. We have seen post-COVID, maybe it's an effect of COVID and the isolation and the roads being different than they are now, but I don't believe in coincidences, Gary.
Me neither.
The fact that we explored a bill about impaired driving and saying we want to lower blood alcohol level from 0.08 to 0.05 to reduce danger of our roads. But we've done nothing. We've done nothing to address the detection and the prevention and the arrest of marijuana-impaired driving because we don't have a test for it. We don't know how to handle it. And we also handcuff law enforcement's ability to have probable cause when you smell this weed. That is the law that we passed out on the police accountability bill that prevents law enforcement to enforce these laws. So the problem I have is the dangers of our road are real. We have seen wrong-way driving. We have seen increased tragedies that are preventable on our roads. And shame on those people that did not evaluate the risk and the danger of legalizing marijuana. And now they say, geez, we want to lower blood alcohol level and things like that. You should have thought of it when the consequences were real before we approved it. And so for me, the frustration is those two factors are critical to impairment. But we want to enforce one and put our hands up and say we don't know how to handle the other. The third aspect is all of this has to do with enforcement, Gary. We have tied the hands of our law enforcement officials with one hand tied behind their back to be able to enforce the laws. So we have a arrogance and a recklessness of the law and order on our roads, and we see it. We see the danger. We see the recklessness. We see the speeding leading to potentially dangerous results. For me, if you can see that I'm emotional about it, these are preventable. We should have thought better as legislative in our proactive actions.
You know, you mentioned something about lowering the threshold for what constitutes drunken driving. Look, I hear that, and I'm like, so basically you can go out and have a nice dinner and have a glass of wine and drive home, and you're considered drunk, even though you're not drunk. I guess according to the law, you're drunk. I mean, If they're going to lower, so they're lowering the threshold for what is driving under the influence, but you can drive stoned all day and night. And the weed nowadays, let's face it, you and I both know, it's not like it was in the 60s and 70s. I mean, this is potent stuff. Everything is just so backwards in this state, but I guess that's indicative of the times that we're living in nationally.
But it shouldn't be, Gary, because, you know, the doobies are much stronger than the younger days because the concentration of THC, which is the drug effect of it all. But the reality is, as I said in our debate on this, you know, if you want to manage alcohol, great. But you know what? Not addressing marijuana influence, not supporting our law enforcement, not allowing our law enforcement to enforce the laws on the road because of the arrogance and the recklessness of the people who don't think that they will be arrested is leading to the tragedies that are on road that can be preventable. So for me, I'm passionate about this, is the fact that
I can tell.
I've talked to too many family members who have seen victims.
Tony, I'm at the end of my time here, brother. But I always love having you on. We'll get you back on sooner rather than later. How about that?
Always, Gary. A pleasure.
You got it, brother. We're coming right back to Open Phones. Call now.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Deadlines today for former
president.com.
Gary and Joe on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC, celebrating 100 years, AM 1360 and FM 103.3, Hartford.
I'm still trying to get over these 43 car break-ins in Rocky Hill. And the cop being there towards the end, obviously the cop didn't witness all 43 break-ins. I mean, that takes a while to do. Or maybe it doesn't take a while to do. What the hell do I know? I've never broken into a car. But I guess he was witness to the last few, and he couldn't intervene because it's public property. Why call the cops?
Can we say it takes at least a minute to break into a car? Let's say it takes a minute. Let's go ahead and make it it's going to take a minute to break into a car.
People wonder why they take the law into their own hands.
45 minutes.
You're told to call the police, and the police get there, and they can't do anything because it's private property. It's civil. It's not right. I thought it was illegal. I don't know. I'm sorry. I know. We had a cop that called in very early this morning in the 6 o'clock hour, explained to us that they're basically handcuffed, no pun intended, because of the law, how it's written. And I sit there and I just shake my head. You can't say don't take the law into your own hands, call the police, only to have the police have their own hands handcuffed. Two plus two isn't equaling four here. It's one or the other. Either I'm going to have to take care of this myself, or you got to give the police all their tools and allow them to make arrests. Seriously, I just sit there and go, hey, you know what? If I'm a thief, and I just knowing what people got away with in Rocky Hill, I'm hitting another complex tonight. And I'm going, hey, the cop could even show up. He ain't going to come over to me.
I'm looking for one with more than 43 cars in it. I know that.
He's not going to pursue me. Good God. I'm sorry. I digress. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair. Well, I guess he's he likes to talk transportation, so I guess we can start with this. I wasn't going to. I was going to talk some EVs. But we'll get to that. Let's welcome back to the show, James Cameron. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing my best to get by. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Hey, I heard the conversation about the 43 cars in Rocky Hill.
Yeah.
I have no clue. There's more to that story we haven't heard yet. And, you know, I think even if cops arrest people, what happens to them after they're arrested?
Exactly. They don't get prosecuted.
Far too often they just get popped, and then the cops. I mean, we've had people in my town. I live down in Fairfield County. We have people that were arrested by cops for breaking into cars or opening unlocked cars, which we have a lot of as well, too. That's stupid. And they said to the cops, okay, see you tomorrow night.
I love it.
That's got to be discouraging to a police officer trying to enforce the law, right?
It's just we're in a sense of the wild, wild west here. Yeah. It's lawless, you know, and I can't make heads or tails of it. You know, let's legalize recreational marijuana while people are driving the wrong way. And on every day they're getting on. They're driving the wrong way on highways. There's no test for it when you pull somebody over. Yet let's criminalize somebody who actually has an extra glass of wine at dinner, and they're maybe legally drunk, but they're not really drunk.
Oh, don't get me started on drunk driving. There, those wrong way drivers are most often drunk. They're not high.
You don't think they're high?
I don't think so. I think they're mostly drunk.
Well, but
who's out on the road?
But drunk driving's been around since
driving the wrong way on the parkway, you know.
So then help me with this. Drunk. I mean, people have been drunk, been able to drink for since prohibition, right? So people have been driving the cars for 100 years. Why this sudden uptick then of wrong way driving in blaming it on alcohol, like exclusively alcohol? When the numbers have gone up since the time that they increased legalized recreational use of marijuana,
If you look at the stats, I think post COVID there has been an increase in all kinds of stupid vehicular activity, and people are driving. They're running through stoplights. They're driving over the speed limit, and I think the wrong way driving thing is just another indication of people who are impaired, and they should be home sleeping it off, not being out behind the highway.
Well, impaired.
But let's talk about EVs.
You want to talk about EVs?
Yeah.
That topic that never gets old here, I guess. All right, so EVs are. If you own an EV, electric vehicle, you're kind of getting a free ride on our highways because, of course, they don't buy gasoline, so therefore they don't pay gas tax, which of course are used in order to pay the maintenance and repairs of our highways and byways. You want to comment on that?
Exactly the point in my column today in CT Mirror. I think that the people who drive electric vehicles are literally getting a free ride. And they're doing more damage to our highways than traditional vehicles.
No, because they're heavy.
Electric vehicles have those batteries in them. For example, a Tesla Model X weighs 5,000 pounds. Compared to the average American internal combustion engine car, gasoline car, of about 3,700 pounds. So the heavier the vehicle, the more damage they do to the roads. And yet the EV driver is being incentivized to get an EV. They're getting a tax credit. The utility companies are giving them a rebate for installing a home charging system. But they're paying $0 into the special transportation fund to maintain our highways that they are destroying.
For now. You wait. The legislature will. They already know this. We don't have to remind them. They're well aware. There will be something tagged on to the next EV station to get a charge up. Believe me, they're not going to let this go on much longer.
Well, you've been in the House. You were there. You know how this the House operates. Let's see what happens, because so far they've been talking about this. They've been warned about this. But the special transportation fund that's funded by gasoline taxes is just awash in money these days. So there's no particular incentive to start cracking down on EVs. Plus, the Lamont administration has done everything they can to encourage people to get electric vehicles. So I don't think they want to start saying, you are destroying the highways. Maybe we should tax you. And we're not talking about a lot of money here. In some states, they whack buyers of EVs with like $450 at the purchase time.
Yeah.
And then in other states, they don't charge the purchase price, but they charge for the extra electricity you're going to be using. Because the bigger the car, the bigger the electric vehicle, the heavier it is, the more electricity it uses to charge itself up. So that's another way of collecting money for the highways.
Well, to your point that I know how things are run up there. So you're right when you say, well, it won't be that much of a tax. That's, you're right, in the beginning. That's how they get it. That's how they get it. That's how they pass it. Well, it's going to be small. Of course, it's open-ended. Because when you look at the language of the bill, they don't cap it at that amount. You know, it's going to get an increase. I remember the tolls when they kept on saying, I was up in the legislature when they were talking about tolls and going over all the different plans and so on and so forth. And at the time, it was... was it Jim Reddick? I'm trying to think of the commissioner.
Jim Reddicker.
Reddicker, yes. Yeah, and he came in and he gave he came to the House Republican Caucus, the Senate Republican Caucus, House and Senate Democrats, and he gave us this very extensive plan. And I remember a question, it wasn't asked by me, but I certainly was thinking of it at the time. Somebody had asked a question, it's like, okay, so you're right when you say these are very minimal tolls. But will they be that way 2 years from now or 3 years from now? And they all just kind of looked at each other and it's like, well, these are introductory based, you know, and it's like, you're telling me it's introductory based. It'll be adjusted for peak hours and on peak hours and. You know, there was a gantry every 8 miles, and it's like, holy smokes, we went from zero to, like Mach 1000 with implementing these tolls. Obviously, it didn't go anywhere then, but that's how they get it. They say, well, it's just going to be a small fee. Here's my issue on that, and I want you to weigh in on this. If we weren't so heavily taxed as is, we've got taxes that many states don't even have. And I don't just mean one or two taxes. We've got a lot of taxes here. If we weren't already taxed to the max, I might be able to understand a toll. But the fact of the matter is we're overtaxed as is. Feel free to weigh in.
Oh, how much time do you have? I mean...
I'll tell you what. To your point, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. It's only 60 seconds, and we'll come back, and you can have whatever time you need. All right, let's take that break right now. More with Jim Cameron right after this.
Yankee Peddler and Pawn in East Hartford is Connecticut's premier pawn shop, paying you top dollar whether you are pawning or selling your items. It's also your first choice to find great deals on used items. Yankee Peddler and Pawn has everything from gold and silver jewelry to electronics, power tools, some musical instruments, and so much more. With nearly 200 five-star Google reviews, customer service is always their number one priority. Go see Joe at Yankee Peddler and Pawn at 7 Pitkin Street in East Hartford and tell them Gary sent you.
Time is precious. Between work, the kids, and caring for an ailing mom, I have less and less free time. So the time I spend with mom, I want to be meaningful. That's why I leave the cooking, cleaning, and laundry to Euro American Home Care for You. They do it all so that my time with mom is about us, not chores.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cleaning, cooking, laundry, bathing, and errands to Euro American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. Online at homecare4U.com.
A smarter way to start the day. Gary Byron and the Talk of Connecticut. Listen without a subscription on the Talk of Connecticut free listening app.
All right, it's 22 minutes after the hour of 9. We're talking with transportation guru, Jim Cameron. All right, I posed a question to you before the break. Take as much time as you need.
Why do we need tolls? Well, we need some sort of mechanism to make people that use our highways pay for the privilege of using those highways. The gasoline tax is a user fee. The more you drive, the more gasoline you buy, the more that money can be used to repair our highways. But people that are driving from out of state, they know that the gasoline tax is in Connecticut, and they probably, you know, tank up from Rhode Island or New York, and they try to not stop and buy gasoline in Connecticut. So something like 30% of the traffic on I-84 and I-95 are out-of-state people. So they're getting a free ride. We just talked about the EV drivers that are getting a free ride. Gary, somebody's got to pay for all this. There is no free lunch. There's no way of maintaining our highways if we don't have some sort of revenue mechanism. And I think that the toll plan was a good one. The dysfunctional nature of the legislature in which you served never ceases to amaze me. Those people are gutless weasels who didn't even have the courage.
Tell us how you really think of us.
Behind the Democrats.
Hold back.
The Democrats didn't even have the courage to take a vote on this issue.
All right, so go. There's a lot I can comment on there. So let's go back to your 30% percentile. You're right. That's the same figure that I heard as well. It's 70% in-state drivers, 30% out-of-state drivers. So if you implement tolls, that number, that statistic doesn't change. It still would affect the majority of the Connecticut residents than it would out-of-state. The 30% will remain 30%.
Using Easy Pass technology, you can give people a discount who are Connecticut residents and still collect money from people from out of state. You can give them a discount and an incentive for not driving on the highway at peak rush hours, the same way you get a discount for going to see a movie on a Tuesday afternoon instead of seeing it on a Saturday
Then would you
night.
Eliminate the gas tax then? The gas excise tax?
Gasoline tax.
Well, lower it. Why not eliminate it? So that's the purpose of our transportation infrastructure is derived from the gasoline tax, the state tax. So if you want to keep both, you want to have tolls and continue to tax gasoline?
I want to pay for the repair of the highways, Gary. You were in the legislature. You tell me what the process is for those people to get together and actually do something courageous.
I'll give you the answer. Then I'll give you the answer. Then that transportation fund shouldn't be swashed over to the general fund or used for other areas. It should be,
it's
the transportation lockbox.
Not anymore.
There were
it's
so
not.
Many. There were, I called it Swiss
the
cheese.
Constitutional amendment. We passed a constitutional amendment to put a lockbox on those funds. What they are using some of that extra money for is to pay down debt. Do you know that 40% of the Department of Transportation's budget is paying debt service on bonds that were issued decades ago? 40%. That's worse than the teacher pensions.
You didn't think anything could be worse
no,
than that.
Right? Oh, my God.
All right, what's your take on these people who are getting free rides on the CT Fast Track and our trains? They're hopping. They're just hopping on the CT Fast Track. They're not even buying a ticket because it's not supervised. They're just walking on the buses, especially the Fast Track Express. And as far as the trains are concerned, they're just hopping over the
turnstile.
The turnstile. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for.
Well, in New York City, they have a huge problem with fare evasion on the subways and on the trains. I don't think there's quite the same problem in Connecticut. But the MTA, the parent of the subways and Metro North in New York City, estimates that they lose something like $650 million a year in lost fare revenue. I mean, there's a whole sensation of lawlessness in the subways of New York City right now that make me really fearful about riding them. And I'm a transportation nut, okay? I think that the increased use of the police department, they're bringing in the National Guard. Ridership is down on the subways in New York City, not only because people are working from home, but because people are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But even all that increased police presence, they're spending $2.7 million a day in overtime to pay for the police department. That is not sustainable.
Because it's dangerous.
Next question.
Wow.
Bring
no,
it on, Gary.
No, because it's no, to that point, because it's dangerous.
I think there's a perception of danger. I don't think it's necessarily dangerous, but I don't want to take a risk. I would rather stay above ground and ride a bus. I don't like buses. I would rather ride a bus than go down into the subway system right now.
All right, let's bring it back to Connecticut. You think that this has more to do with the government encouraging more mass transit and less individual vehicles on the road?
What I think this has to do with is a lack of police enforcement. The more people see people walking onto a bus, whether it's CT Fast Track or New York City, and not paying their fare, the more they see that, the more they say, well, if he could get away with it, I'm going to do it as well, too. So they need to put plainclothes police officers. They need to grab these people. They need to give them a fine or whatever is appropriate. But they need to let the fare-paying public know they're going to get their money's worth. They've done the right thing. We need to encourage the right kind of behavior, not look the other way when the wrong kind of behavior happens, like happened in Rocky Hill.
Well, yeah, we're kind of coming full circle in our final minute together. I mean, they talk about, well, we need more police officers. While that might be true, let's start with, putting the laws back on the books so that we're not handcuffing the police officers that we have currently.
Amen. Amen, brother.
Wow. Oh. Look at that. We found some common ground here. maybe we can negotiate then.
Hey, you and I, let's just go back up to the Capitol and have words with the caucuses.
Damn it. Let's go.
Let's do it, man.
I'm lacing up my shoes. All right. All right, my friend. As always, I appreciate your time. Good stuff from you. And by the way, I did read your article. I know it just come out. Did it come out yesterday or today or?
CT Mirror, check it out.
I always do. There. Yeah. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Hey, Gary. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. That's Jim Cameron there. James Cameron. Whatever. You call him. I guess we got to distinguish him from the other James Cameron.
Yeah. I call him Jim just for that reason.
Good day. What does he prefer? I should have asked him.
We should ask him. Jim seems like what he likes, but I don't know.
Next time he comes on,
I will ask him.
All right. Open phones are next. All of our lines are open. I'm just waiting to hear from you. Anybody want to weigh in on tolls, EVs, or anything that we've been discussing this morning?
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster, former president.